Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Colm O'Mungo, I'm with you here till 3 o'clock, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your texts, liveline at rte.ie for your emails. We had a lot of calls in when we did the travelling shows last week, fit-ups, travelling theatre companies, ad hoc cinema entertainment, circuses coming to town. There was another phenomenon knocking around in the 1960s, it seems. Maybe it's not peculiar to the 1960s, of men being buried alive and setting world records. There was Cove Man Tim Hayes buried, setting a world record for 100 hours of being buried alive back in the mid-1960s. And then a Tipperary man buried alive for 61 days in 1974. So if you witness this strange phenomenon in Ireland's travelling fair circuit, where a man would be buried underground and for a fee you could speak to him down a pipe as he stayed there underground, or maybe for a fee he would shine a light on his face underneath and you could look down, peer down and see his visage underneath the earth. Maybe this was something that you went along to a fairground to see. Maybe it's something you encountered. You can let us know, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps on that. 51551 for your texts. Now, a world away from men being buried alive in the 1960s to the very modern world of online. David McWilliams, good afternoon to you.
Colm, how are you?
You've been kind of, I suppose, not quite buried alive, but virtually buried under a weight of emails and contacts of people asking you if it's true you're endorsing money-making schemes online. And I think just at a quick trawl today, looking back, you've been saying on your social media channels on an almost weekly basis since early May that no, it's not you, you have nothing to do with this. So let's maybe take it back to the start. What is the scam that was purporting to be connected to you?
What I'd like to do, Colm, is warn people, warn your listeners, that if they see on social media images of me advertising a get-rich-quick scheme largely based around crypto, Colm, that it is an entire fake. It's a criminal enterprise. It's a fraud. It's a scam. And people are being defrauded. Innocent people who are being suckered into this, saying, David McWilliams, yes, we know David. If he's done this, we may well get involved in it. Hundreds of people have emailed me, have called me up, told me, look, this is going on. And all through the summer, and particularly recently, I've had emails from people who have actually been defrauded. So what I want to do is just take the opportunity, Colm, to go on Liveline and say to people listening, do not be taken in by these scams, because the people who are behind it are clever, they are criminal, they will take your money and you will never see it again. Now, and it's been facilitated, unfortunately, by the social media platforms.
Well, and some people may have seen this pop up in paid for ads, and they may assume that if they see a paid for ad online, it's legit and there's some due diligence done behind the ad. So, I mean, there's a screen grab of one doing the rounds online. It's a picture of you. It's a still from a video that, you know, is obviously, from what you're saying, is clearly not genuine. And the quote underneath your face says, for only 24 hours, we are opening access to a project with income of more than €1,000 daily. And then that's signed off as if people didn't know your face already. David McWilliams, Irish economist.
Yeah, so Colm, what you're basically happening is people are being encouraged, coaxed, persuaded to click into what is in effect a vortex of crime and fraud. And innocent people are losing money as we speak. And it's been going on for 4 months. I have left it in the hands of my lawyers to contact the social media platforms involved to try and get them to A, take down this material, but B, also trying to get to the source of who's actually behind this. But the point is that the AI world moves much, much quicker than, as you were just saying there, than the real world. So as soon as ads are taken down, new ads reappear, more people are being coaxed into what I said again is a really nasty, efficient criminal enterprise.
And what kind of sums are you talking about, David? What have you heard back?
I got an email the other day from a woman. I won't mention her names, but she said, I saw your interview with Tommy Tiernan, and I'll explain that, right? And rightly or otherwise, I started with 250 euros. She names the company Fintavex. She said, within days, they'd persuaded 15,000 euros out of me. I am a senior on a very small pension. Now I want to liquidate this account. They say I need to pay tax and other expenses before they can liquidate my account. I don't have that extra money. I am now very suspicious. I'm afraid of losing my 15,000 euros. 15,000 euros. So can you please offer any advice of what can I do? What I want to do now is warn anybody else who may find themselves in this awful situation. And I think it's particularly targeted at elderly citizens, pensioners. I think younger people, Colm, in general, are much more aware of deep fakes and AI and scams and, you know, counterfeits online. I think older people who are not that tech savvy and are probably on a couple of the regular social media platforms are more likely to be taken in.
So just the structure of it, David, I mean, and as you say, there's an online chat forum, people will be aware of it, Reddit, where people go on and they ask questions, and it's, you know, but somebody, again, talking about this, says his 82-year-old father-in-law was contacted by somebody who claimed to have an amazing investment opportunity, and what they needed first was an upfront deposit of 250 euro. This seems to be part of the MO, is it?
This is part of the MO, and so I was talking to this woman. She also said that she eventually and willingly and innocently gave her IBAN and some of her big details to the name of the guy was Brendan Kelly, and she says probably that name is also a fake, and I probably believe it is. So you have an Irish sounding name for an Irish sounding company.
It is a fake name, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, what you're looking at, Colm, is a massive orchestrated scam, which is now being facilitated by the social media platforms, not being taken down quickly enough, or if it is being taken down, other scams are appearing straight away. And constantly, innocent people, gullible people, but entirely without guile people are being forced to, one, as you say, is a 250 quid, you know, 250 euro deposit, and then before you know it, you're involved in something that you can't get out of.
And this is accompanied by, you know, testimonies. And look, I mean, let's face it, I suppose part of your selling point as an economist is somebody who talks about thinking outside the box, unconventional thinking, swimming against the tide. So maybe if somebody sees an endorsement by David McWilliams of something and they go, is it right? Is it wrong? They've had maybe two decades and more of you asking, I suppose, contrarian questions about economic questions. And they might think, well, you know, maybe this is in at the ground floor opportunity with David McWilliams. Maybe that's part of the vulnerability.
Well, Colm, a lot of the emails have come in to say, look, you know, we listened to you before the crash. You were the guy who was saying the housing market was going to crash. The banks were going to crash. We trust you. So, I mean, that's basically the leverage and the credibility that these scamsters are using. And what they're focusing on, again, is Irish people. They are focusing on Irish networks, and they're using my good name to orchestrate a scam where, in effect, you know, billionaires are taking money from pensioners.
And it's an
extraordinary situation.
Has anyone in your family seen these ads? I mean, have you seen them yourself?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen them. You know, I'm a public person. You're a public person, Colm. These things happen, right? I'm not that phased, but like my mum would see it, and she, you know, she was quite shocked by it, because there's a whole series of me being in a hospital. And the background noise is I've been put in hospital for speaking the truth and telling the Irish people that if they click on this number, they will get, you know, they will enrich themselves. But
it's worth explaining maybe what the premise behind the idea is, that, you know, I suppose maverick economist David McWilliams has cracked open a money-making scheme that the elites want to hide from you, ordinary Joe citizen, and this is going to enable you to earn €1,000 a day. And this revealed secret that David McWilliams has been variously arrested, beaten up by shadowy forces, drummed out of the country. I mean, I suppose, look, and you've mentioned an interview with Tommy Tiernan as well. I mean, can you give us an example of what's out there that people should be on alert about? So, what kind of fakes are out there?
I think you've actually put it extremely well. So basically, the idea is that the financial elites don't want you to know a secret that McWilliams has unearthed. And this is your opportunity to jump together with us and make your fortune. And as a result of his amazing ability, the financial elites, the government, the powers that be have come down and deported Mr. McWilliams.
So, and is there video footage of your deportation?
There's deportation, which is, yeah. So there's images of me in hospital with black eyes, all that sort of stuff. But that's the latest version of the scam. The original version of the scam was me on The Late Late, me on Tommy Tiernan, revealing to Tommy there's some basically extraordinary opportunity, but being bungled out of the studio as a result of unveiling this. But you can make a fortune if you click on this number and you can share in this sort of...
All right, so they try to bundle them out, they try to hide the truth, but, you know, we can bring this investment opportunity.
So what it is just... It's something that's obviously worked before. I'd say 95% of people or 90% of people say that this is too good to be true, this is ridiculous, right? But there's always going to be a small minority of people who say, you know what, this sounds okay to me. And they are largely going to be the most vulnerable, the people who are probably not financially the most savvy. They're not thinking about this stuff all the time.
Well, it's a perfect storm, isn't it? They may not be tech savvy and aware of deep fakes. Exactly. They may not be financially savvy. You know, they may also trust you. So where all of those Precisely. Points of this Venn diagram come together, that's where the vulnerable people are.
Exactly. And so what I'm finding is that the people tend to be older. The people who are actually contacting me, who eventually find my email and or have somebody who knows me, because Ireland is a small country, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Like it's always somebody's auntie's friend has just done this and suddenly you get a call from somebody. But the key thing for us, Colm, today is to just to reinforce to people that this is happening. There are hundreds of these fakes out there. And if they see my image associated with a get-rich-quick scheme, just run a mile from it. Please run a mile from it.
And when you say...
There's no way of knowing where this money is going at the moment. Now, hopefully in time we will find that out. But right now it's going into a black hole. It's going into some financial scam online and then disappearing.
Right. And the alleged purport, you know, the interview that purports to be you and Tommy Tiernan talking about this, where you're bundled out of the studio and similarly the Late Late Show, is this actually video footage with something resembling you being dragged out of a TV studio?
This is AI. This is artificial intelligence. This is, if you want to get philosophical about it, this is the way the world is going.
Right.
Unless the platforms are called to account, and unless they stop this at source, this will only get worse, and the AI will only become more and more and more convincing. Like in the initial part, the AI of me was, I had a very, very bizarre English accent, right? That was ages ago, suggesting that the people were putting together were not...
I mean, if you had to, you probably could do an English accent, but, you know, it's not how you generally go about.
Yeah, but the point is, they will get the accent perfect eventually, because AI is getting better and better and better. And so on a philosophical basis, Colm, we are moving into a world of deep fakes, of frauds, we're moving into the greatest era of fraud there has ever been.
Well, how potentially damaging is that then? Look, I mean, you turn a book by doing podcasts and speaking at events and writing articles and all of that, you know, and you put it out there and you want people to sign up to your podcast and that's how you make your way in the world, as well as other stuff. So, I mean, how damaging is it to you?
Well, I mean, there's two things going on. I think the most important thing in terms of what we're discussing now is to warn people and protect innocent people out there in the country. The second issue is whether or not this is damaging to me. Of course it is, precisely because you are being inveigled into what is a criminal enterprise. But I think that enough people will be able to see through this. But what I really want to do, Colin, this is not about me today. This is about trying to protect anyone all over the country who's got a few quid, a pensioner, who's got a little small nest egg, and they're thinking, wouldn't it be great to make, you know, easy money? And suddenly they find that their entire pension nest egg is gone.
Right, and people probably are hearing about, you know, fortunes being made in crypto, you know, and it's obviously a high risk thing to be into, but you know, some people want to get on that bandwagon and see what they can do. Look, we did put into one of the platforms for a reply. Somebody from Meta got back to us. They would be in charge of Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram. They say scammers are relentless and continuously evolve their tactics to try and evade detection, which is why we're constantly developing new ways to make it harder for scammers to deceive others, including facial recognition technology. It's against our policies to impersonate public figures, and we will remove these accounts and ads when we become aware of them. That's from Meta. And just to hand, one has landed from Google. It says, protecting users is our top priority, and we have strict ads policies that govern the type of ads and advertisers we allow in our platforms. We enforce our policies vigorously. If we find ads that are in violation, we remove them. We continue to invest significant resources to stop bad actors, and we're constantly evaluating and updating our policies and improving our technology to keep our users safe. So that's from two of the bigger platforms there. I mean, I think you have made efforts, David, I think, to try and get stuff taken down and also to prevent it reappearing when you have alerted them to it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's incumbent on those platforms that are complicit in this to create technology that can stop it. After all, we are in an AI boom. They are spending hundreds of billions of dollars on artificial intelligence. It would seem to me to be quite obvious that some of that money should be diverted to stopping these scams because innocent users are being defrauded.
Okay, Mary, good afternoon to you.
Hiya, hiya David, how are you?
Mary, how you doing?
Good. So, Mary, tell us about your experience, because you're aware of one of these scams. In fact, this isn't something you just happened across online. This is, you know, they've proactively been getting on to you.
Yeah, well, what happened was I seen it on X, and I seen crypto and Bitcoin, and like, I'm in my 50s, but I would love to know a little bit about it, you know, and I thought it was like an information pack you get or an email you get. You know, everybody talks about it, so I was like, I'd really like to know the background and, you know, if you were to start, you know, dabbling in it, how would it be and what way it goes. But anyway, I got to the stage where I just put my phone number in, and then I went, you know what, I seen the thing at the end that said, you know, put your credit card details in and whatever it said, and I was like, oh god, no. So I kind of just I just came out of it, as in I didn't press send to send my information, so it was like I didn't actually even write it. It was like that. It was Tommy McTiernan and David Williams in the Late Late Studio, but the background of it was the Irish Independent, so it was like it was being advertised by the Irish Independent. So number one, you've got two familiar faces. You've got a familiar program, and then you've got a familiar newspaper. So all those, you're like, oh, this is definitely legit. You know, let's have a go. And just so I got down to my phone number anyway, and I decided no. I was got a little bit afraid then. But then they rang me 31 times, different accents, you know, totally beautifully manuscripted their spiel, as you'd say.
And it was, do you think, was it a real person or a kind of an AI generated message? Which do you think it was, just from listening?
I don't know because to be honest with you, some of the things you see on Facebook and X, like, you're like, you know, even looking at videos, you're saying to yourself, is that actually a real picture now, or is this? So you don't know. I wouldn't even thought it would have been AI until you said it there. I would have thought it was a normal person. It got to the stage where 31, every single time I blocked a number, a new number would come up.
31 times? And in what kind of a time frame are you talking?
It's probably, I'd say, I was talking to one of the girls there, I said about 3 months, but it's actually only in 6 weeks.
Right.
So I got a call yesterday. So there's hardly a day goes by without getting the calls.
So you hadn't even clicked send on the form. You just entered the basic details, and then you said, "You know what? I'm out."
Yeah.
And even at that, somebody on the other side was somebody was reading.
It was like they were photocopying. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It got to the stage there. Like, I'm in my 50s. My daughter's in her 20s, and she just started taking the phone off me. And because then she was nervous. She was like, "Mom, what did you do?" And I was like, "Actually did nothing. All I did was just put my name and my phone number." And then I felt a bit stupid myself. I'm like, "God, what the fuck did I do? Excuse me. What did I actually do here?" But I didn't like do anything. It's like It was like just filling out a form to get information. Now, I rang the independent and I sent them the screenshot of the ad. And you know who. Because it said all the different names. There was a photograph of the studio where David McWilliams was in it and Tommy Tiernan. So it looked like it was from. So I Googled to see, was he bundled out studio? Because I had to find out for myself, is this real or is this not? So do you know what I mean? So then I knew it wasn't. And I was like, am I glad now that I didn't put any more information in?
Bit of a fright though, all the same.
I think all the calls, I got a bit frightened when I got all the calls. Because I was like, how deep are they going to go now to actually get me? What do they want? They know I don't want to fill out any forms. They said, "Oh, you only got halfway through filling out your application form," and that's what they said to me. And I was like, how far are they going to go now to actually get me to either hand over money or what? Because I was getting afraid of all the calls. Because
Did you find them threatening
In the beginning? Well, I did. I in the beginning, no, but then they were getting annoyed at me, like more or less saying, "You wasted our time filling out the form. What did you want? What do you expect? What did you expect to get from this?" So then that's when my daughter took the phone up off me. She was like, I'm going to answer these calls now. But every time I got a call, I had to block that number, and a new number had come through, block that number. So that was 31 times new numbers.
Okay. Well, David, they're pretty determined.
Well, I mean, Mary, it's, you know, when I hear your case, you're one of hundreds, maybe thousands of people. You're right. You see my face, you see Tommy Tiernan. You say, "I know those two." It's the Irish Independent. It's RTE by way of the fact that it's the Tommy Tiernan show. I've heard that they've been also on Irish Times headed letters. But what I want to reinforce that these people are dangerous criminals. Sometimes when you're talking about the internet and scams, you're kind of people sort of convince themselves it's not that serious. These are dangerous, dangerous criminals. They will harass you. They will come after you. They will use your details in whichever possible way they can to try and extort money out of you. This is why we're here, because Mary, just, you know, by virtue of your own gut feeling, said, not sure about this. But how many people out there, Mary, didn't say that?
And how many people, David, do we not know about? And Mary said herself she was mortified for even going that far. I mean, you've heard from a woman who has contacted you, but the person who's posting I read on Reddit was speaking on behalf of their father-in-law, who may not want to have, you know, come forward at all. There could be other people there who are just dying of embarrassment over this.
Well,
You feel like, am I an idiot? Have I done this? But I mean, it's so convincing. Sorry, Mary, to cut you off. But I mean, you were convinced.
You're grand.
It's
I
so
just
convincing.
Think that the fact that they're what would you say? Those people have been named around your household. You know, you listen on podcasts, or you listen on the radio, or you watch on the telly. So why would you think in your head that these people would be in? I'm not saying for yourselves, but why would you? How would you actually?
Yeah, how could this be a scam with such kind of household names?
Yeah, household. That's exactly it. Household names. You know, you're saying, well, they couldn't exaggerate the RTE. They couldn't exaggerate the Late Late and this and that and the other. So you're saying, I was saying to myself, like, if they're doing that, they have to scam like five people. And I doubt they're doing that, but actually they are, you know. Right. So they're kind of coming through to the, and it's the older crowd they're getting at. They're getting at the Late Late viewers. They're getting at the, you know, I'm not saying you're older, and, you know, but they're getting at the age, you know, they're getting at the age group that actually enjoy watching you, enjoy, you know, what you have to offer and blah, blah, blah. So they know who they're targeting. Whereas this, you know, there's no younger person would say, "Oh, you know, I'm sitting in, watch the Late Late. We're interested. We enjoy it." So this is the age bracket they're getting at.
Right. I mean, look, David, even though you've absolutely, as you've said, no connection to this, you do feel a responsibility to come out and distance yourself from this. So, I mean, on one level, you must have been shaken by the scale of it.
I'm shaken by the scale of it. I now realise, and it's again substantiates Mary's point, we're in a new world, right? We're in a new world. My good name has been besmirched, but that is of less consequence long term to the fact that many, many innocent people will have been robbed. This is robbery. There's no other way of putting it. It's not like I come back. We have to use language that identifies and really describes what's going on, which is innocent people are being robbed of their own, typically pensions and life savings, using my name as a front for a bunch of criminals who are being facilitated by platforms.
And there is no shame in coming forward.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
There's no shame in coming forward to regulators or police or anyone else. There's no point in keeping this hidden because, as you said, Dave, this has got increasingly sophisticated. It's absolutely understandable why someone might have been taken in by this. And even Mary, you know, halfway through, you're putting in your details. You may have even stopped putting in your details. You might not have hit send.
You didn't.
And you might still be sitting there mortified,
now,
having lost money.
Yeah. 100%, but I was going to just say one thing there, and you just hit the nail on the head. It doesn't matter what assurances Google get, X get. There needs to be something that sits into place when it's a figurehead advertising something, and it's up to them to do the checks, because you can't check what's false about you online, but they have to check what's being advertised on their platform. You're not going to advertise anything wrong on your Facebook page, your own Facebook page, but they're allowing it. So there has to be fact checks. And like, even if it means there's extra sort of policing around that in particular thing, and you mightn't get people mightn't get their ad out on time if it means that they have to do.
Right.
But you'd rather that than people be down. They're 20 grand or 15 grand.
Well, as you say, we brought you the responses of Meta and Google. You think, Mary, they should be more proactive. David McWilliams has made the public call and distanced himself from that. So thanks to you, David, and to Mary. We'll take a quick break. Back in a minute. 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApp. Solly Drumgool, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon to you.
You were listening to the item at the top. David McWilliams was on talking to Mary as well about the social media scams that are being promoted online.
Yeah, well, we have a small business ourselves now. Our business is dog pens, and we're totally moving away. We're not moving away from social media, but what we're appealing to people is to call us. Ring us up on the phone. You'll know after a minute or two the person you're talking to. Because we get a lot of customers ring us looking for a price on the product. We have a high-end, we have a very, very good product. It's a high-end of the market. And the next thing, they go on the internet and it arrives in the post. Now, we deliver all our stuff personally ourselves and deliver it and put it up in Everton. So if we could send it in the post, we would, you know.
And your fear is, I mean, have you had any bad experience of online ads purporting to be have you heard back from people that, you know, they've had an experience thinking it was you when it wasn't?
No, well, we've done a very job this morning for a man. The contact was 6 weeks ago looking for a price, right? We give him the price. He went on the internet. It came up on his phone. 5 minutes later, he bought a product at less than half the price. He didn't take it out of the box. He showed me this morning. We've done the job for him this morning. But he paid me 2.5 times the price. But the money he spent, I just don't want to go into the figures with you.
Right.
But the money he spent is a total waste of money. Because it was just something that was fake. He was caught in it. He spent 400 euros.
And just,
but it was a waste of money.
And what he got in the box, was it on any level, could it have been made into what
useless.
He thought it was? No.
No, it was useless. That was our business. This wouldn't keep any cash what he bought.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? We have a new product being launched. We made the decision of this a year and a half ago. Well, and we decided we're going to launch on social media, but we have a stand in the playing match next week, and we haven't put it up on social media, this reason. 250,000 people will see it next week at the playing match.
All right. Okay, look, Ollie, thanks for that. That's our lot for today. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815. And 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApp messages, 51551 for your text. Jim O'Connor, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Con.
Take us back to last Thursday. What time did you get up at?
I got up at 5:30.
And where did you, where were you headed?
Well, let's put it this way. I had a great inspiration from a friend of mine earlier on the previous day. My friend John had been in Switzerland, and he had been tempted to go to, hold on to this now, the Stiftsbibliothek Library in St. Gallen in Switzerland. And he had me absolutely mouth-watering over the gorgeous Irish manuscripts that he'd seen there and had never really heard much about before. Anyway, before the evening was out, I'd done some research. Oh, sorry, he was the first one to suggest that you could have St. Gallen at home. Because the National Museum, in collaboration with the Swiss Library, have a special expedition at the, did I say expedition? Exhibition on at the moment called Words on the Wave.
Okay.
And so, it's run from earlier this year until October.
And you are a manuscript enthusiast, it'd be safe to describe as that. I think that's even an understatement.
Well, I'd probably be above average in terms of my interests. I've done courses in calligraphy, I've collected books on our manuscripts and all sorts of manuscripts. Yeah, I'd be enthusiastic.
Okay.
I didn't mention it, but I'm 79 and very little excites me nowadays apart from something to do with calligraphy and writing.
Okay. It should be pointed out that, you know, St. Gallen, St. Killian, a lot of Irish monks in the early Middle Ages brought Christianity back to Europe after the Dark Ages, after Rome had fallen, and they founded monasteries, and beautiful manuscripts were produced in these monasteries. They wandered on foot all over Europe. So to replicate these epic journeys of Irish monks, you rose at 5:30 in Castletown Bear in West Cork. And you, what was your first mode of transport, Jim?
Well, you put it very, very well. my first mode of transport was a small electric car that I stepped into around 6 o'clock at the day, and I drove to Glengarrett. And I had checked at some stage during the night, I checked on times, because it's quite complicated if you want to go to Dublin from here to there on public transport. I have, at my age, a free pass and so on.
Right.
It'd be silly not to. In any case, to drive to Dublin is not as easy as it used to be for me.
So you parked up the electric vehicle in Glengarriff, and the next mode of transport was?
Our bus arrived on time with a friendly bus driver, just as well, because I was the only passenger. And he was going through Kenmare and on to Killarney. As I said, I checked on times of trains and buses. So in Killarney, I didn't have to wait terribly long and just walk around the corner, really, to the rail station. And then I was on my way within the hour, I think, to Mallow. At Mallow, you change.
Right.
And you have a train to Houston. And at Houston, I was a little bit, it's not exactly shell-shocked, but kind of civilization shocked, you know, going from our beautiful peninsula, very, very quiet, and I do a lot of work in my man cave, and then suddenly you're in the hustle and the bustle and so on.
Right, so off at Houston, on to the Lewis.
Yes. I asked what was the best way of getting to the National Library, and somebody said this and somebody said that. So in the end, I took the Lewis part of the way and I took the bus part of the way, and I walked the rest.
Right, okay. So sparing a thought as you went along, if only St. Gall had had such transport available to him, you know, how many other monasteries would he have founded zipping around Europe on high-speed rail? Alas, he had to go on foot and by horse and cart. But anyway, you arrived at your destination, the National Museum, to feast your eyes upon the manuscripts of St. Gallen.
You're terribly well informed, but I must correct you. He only founded the one monastery. He was a travelling companion of St. Columba.
Right. What I'm saying is, if he had access to high speed rail, he might have founded a few more of them. That's my net point on this. But anyway,
there was others in parallel, and there was others coming in the future, and we didn't let the slide down in the overall civilizing of Europe. But anyway, so I got to the National Museum, and quite quickly I was shown the entrance to the exhibition. There was posters up all over the place. And I realized that on the way, of course, that I only really had 2 hours at the museum if everything went well.
So what time is it around now at the museum? Like you've got up at 5:30 and you arrived at the museum at
1 o'clock, say.
Okay, 1 o'clock. All right. So quite a hefty journey on the road. You're about
6 hours
to go.
Yeah, but it wasn't unpleasant, and chatting on the train is great, you know, and all that kind of thing.
So anyway, would you recommend the exhibition?
Totally.
Really?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I had a problem. And, the first problem is to actually get there. But then you get there, you have all the time in the world. You know, it's 1 o'clock, doesn't close till 5:30, plenty of time. But in any case, I had to be leaving there in 2 hours. And because of my age, a little bit sight challenged. So I actually photographed and videoed the many, many displays. But I was absolutely almost ecstatic over the books and could imagine drooling over them later on in the week at home, blowing them up to a size I could see. But anyway...
So you had 2 hours planned anyway to go around taking the snaps and doing the filming and zooming in and out on the highlights of a rich exhibition.
Yeah, that's it. I was very used to the National Museum because I did study in the National Library back in the 90s, and I knew where everything was. You know, this was a new exhibition, and it was very easily guided to it, and off you went. Mm. But anyway, I was relaxing with a couple of other gentlemen of my age, who obviously had a good Irish. And we were testing out one another. I wouldn't be great at the Irish, but, you know, I have the couple of vocal like most people. And we were having a bit of fun whilst we were watching a video of, actually it's a really interesting video. It's how the Irish archaeologist in the museum proved that many of the manuscripts that they didn't suspect were Irish were actually drawn and painted on Irish ox hides. This is fantastic new DNA research, absolutely cutting edge stuff. And that's fascinating. That opens up God knows what into the future, you know.
Okay.
But anyway, enjoying all this, and I thought, at least I've recorded everything now. I can study it at my leisure. And I was looking forward to the chat with the lads and walking around when we were asked to leave.
Asked to leave? Why?
Asked to leave.
Okay.
Leave the exhibition.
Did you get the opening times wrong?
1 o'clock.
Right.
In the day,
what was the reason for the tap on the shoulder?
Well,
had the chat got too loud?
Not at all. We were almost whispering. We were sitting on a bench watching a film, you know, with subdued audio on it. And I thought for a minute maybe I'd been doing something wrong with the cameras and that, you know, breaking some law. But it wasn't. The explanation was. There were important visitors from Switzerland going around the exhibition, and we had to leave.
After the Irish monks, after their long journeys, having delivered these fine manuscripts to Switzerland, a manuscript enthusiast like yourself, after making a similar epic journey, was now being displaced by the very Swiss to whom this manuscript had been brought.
I said, at least I wasn't wading through 7-foot snowdrifts on the Grand St. Bernard Pass, you know, which is actually part of the story. But anyway, we were kind of gentlemen, if you like, with a certain amount of self-confidence, and we argued the toss, and the poor man that was asking us to leave was embarrassed, but he was doing what he was told to do, and he was ushering us in one direction only, which was towards the exit door on the first floor of the National Museum. And we got to the door and we met another I didn't get his name. I wasn't geared up to doing anything forensically or anything like that. I was stunned. Mm. And so were the other two guys as well.
And how long were you told the other delegation were going to be going around? I mean, would you have squeezed in at least a portion of your 2 hours after they had been around and looked at the manuscript?
You have the forensic turn of mind. I didn't have in the circumstances. And we were only told to leave. We understood that that was it. And but when I was finally, because they did argue the task inside and outside, but not with the staff right. on the ground floor, as it were, because they were just doing what they were told to do. Somebody higher up has made the decision that the Muir Irish must clear a path for visitors. And I actually saw the tail end of the, in fact, if they were into security matters, you know, they exposed this group to me. I might have had a Kalashnikov hidden up my coat, you know.
You didn't, and, for the record. No. A Kalashnikov was not something. You might have left it behind in the car in Glengariff on that particular day. Well, come here. We did get a statement from the National Museum. It says, when requested, Museum of Ireland. Yeah, we did. The National Museum of Ireland facilitates tours for visiting dignitaries. That's not you, by the way, Jim. Tours for visiting dignitaries.
I'm near Irish,
man. Diplomats and guests. On occasion, for protocol or security reasons, private tours are required. It's not a very regular occurrence. When the need arises, we aim to ensure the least possible disruption for our visitors, including continued access to other areas of the museums and galleries as appropriate. And they go on to say the Words on the Wave exhibition is currently on display. It's free. And then they say there should have been a notice on our website and digital media channels to indicate the exhibition would be closed for an hour to facilitate a private tour. Well, that answers my question on how long they would have been there. This did not happen on this occasion. However, we can confirm that advanced verbal notice was given to people in the exhibition space ahead of time. Were you told this before you went in, that you would have to exit early to facilitate
Absolutely
this tour?
Absolutely not. It was a total surprise and a shock as we sat in the middle of the exhibition. The two lads, Liam and the other chap, you know, were like myself. They were really, really interested, and we liked talking about the exhibition. There was no way there was any science, any indication whatsoever. When I was leaving in the vestibule, I was still asking directions. I asked if the number 4 would get me back to the station. And the lovely guy there, I'd say he was middle management in the museum. He was very polite and very gracious. Right. And he said, and he tried to give me advice, but he told him the story. He was appalled.
He was
appalled.
All right. Okay. Well, we don't know who he is or what rang. I suppose we don't want several people being mistaken with this and an attitude attributed to them that they may not want attributed to them. Anyway, they say they would like to sincerely apologise for any inconvenience caused. They understand visitors are making long journeys to view the unique landmark exhibition, and they regret any disappointment caused. They would be happy to engage directly with any visitors affected to arrange another tour at a suitable time in the coming week. So would you travel up for it again?
It's very easy for them to offer because the admission is free. What is not free is my time. My time is valuable. It gets more valuable by the year. And no, I wouldn't take up their offer. Again, I'd still have the same long journey. I would be avoiding the Dublin horrific hotel prices, too, even though I'm not...
Right. That's why you were going up and down on the one day.
Well, I probably thought I was younger than I actually am, you know. Right. I did overstretch. I was very, very tired at the end of the day.
Right.
But I was also angry for a lot of it as well, and, you know, feeling that I had been the victim of somebody's... They're not living up to the.
Okay, you felt as a citizen of the country that it wasn't what you expected. Anyway, look, Jim, you heard it. They have apologized. You can consider that apology at your leisure, or engage with them directly.
Right.
Thanks for joining us today. We're back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
0874 844 8888 is the WhatsApp number. Another number is Friday, the 24th of October. That's the day of the presidential election. It is going to be a Friday, and the schools are now back on stream, it seems, with the suspension of the caretaker and secretary strike. So the question of whether those venues will be available seems, at least in the short term, to have been solved. But some questions raised over the wisdom of having it on a Friday, or should it be at the weekends? Anne Garavan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm. And if I might, I'd like to make three very strong points.
Go
number
for it.
One, of course, we should all vote. And number two, of course, Europe is synonymous with a Sunday. Now, my three points are, and I think they're very important, Sunday, voting day, family day, enticing children, going with mummy and daddy to vote, and maybe tuning them in to what the day is about, and maybe at the end of the day, after having a lovely family together, especially on a Sunday, maybe a visit to McDonald's. Now, more importantly of all is are the students. Students cannot expect to be down in the middle of a week. They come down on a Sunday. They could come down by train, go back in the evening by train, not disrupt the studies, not disrupt the colleges, and it all works out beautifully. And on a more slightly human aspect of the day, you know right well that most people get their salaries during on a Friday. Now, on a Friday, what a day. On a Friday, people love to join up with clients and maybe celebrate with a little drink, or the women might watch lovely shoes during the week, and they're running down with their pay packets, and by the time they get in, they have no interest in going out. Now, I have met myself personally between grandchildren and the lot. Those three categories are people who have not voted, and of course, in my book, you see the Africans queuing up for hours on end. We're really spoiled. So I'm saying to the government, if I may, government, for the love of God, will you please have anything like that on a Sunday? The young children will remember the great day they had out with Ma and Pa and visiting McDonald's in their innocent minds, and they'd be slowly coerced into doing the same thing.
As you say, though, you know, there's, you know, if we have those great historic images of the first democratic elections post-apartheid in South Africa, where people queued around the block to cast their vote, there is the danger that people, you know, get up on a Sunday morning, have breakfast at their leisure, and a few hours later, after perusing the Sunday papers, go in the middle of the afternoon for their lunch and maybe have a glass of something to accompany that and recline with a nap, and then wake up to their horror on the couch at 5 to 10 in the evening and realise that it's all become too late to vote.
Yeah, and remember, Colm, students, your sons and daughters are travelling down on the Sunday. So you're going to wait for them. They make it in mid-afternoon. Make it a family day, relaxed, absolutely.
Right.
And just on a Sunday, have the Sunday marked that election days are on a Sunday, and it's family day, and no matter what way you get it, you will not get that little coercing of family during the week. And if I might add, and I hope I'm not speaking too much, I would love to see the presidential election. I would like to see the people, which we all love, going through the paces on the telly on Sunday night at prime time.
Right.
That's when everyone is sitting down, ready to listen to the human aspect, the dropouts, the drop-ins, and please have imagination, government. Okay. But I say you cannot argue from all aspects on a Sunday. A family day, doing your duty, rewarding the family, student happy, college is happy, the whole world's happy. But we must vote. It's a privilege.
Okay. All right. Well, Anne, thanks for that. Declan, do you agree?
I don't really. No, I think, Colm, if you want to vote, you'll go and vote.
Right.
I mean, it's open now from, in the latter number of years, I think it's about 7 a.m. till I think about 10 p.m. And, you know, if you want to vote, you'll find the time to go.
But do you think it should be? Do you think a Friday as a day is a good day to have it?
No, Friday's okay. Friday's okay, and I do agree with you. I mean, some days you might. I think if you want to go, you'll go. Like, I mean, I'm just saying. Even if it was on a Sunday, I was at both a football match yesterday and a hurling match, and if the election was on yesterday, I still would have made it me business to go and vote. Right.
What do you think of the closure of the schools, though?
Postal votes, Joe. Colm, sorry. Mm. You have a postal vote now, which we didn't have over the years, if you travel with your work. One time only the Army or a Garda had a postal vote. You can have a postal vote now if you're in a hospital or in a nursing home.
And do you think that should be more widely available?
Only people that really need it. I don't need the postal vote at the moment. I wouldn't necessarily go that way. But here in the town here in Carlow, even in rural places, there's no excuse. If you want to go and vote, there's no hassle. I mean, there's schools out the country. People pass in and out regularly. If you really want to do it, I mean, as I say, okay, I know there's been debates over the years, debates on your programme and various things about it being compulsory in other countries. Okay, I'm not sure if that's the road to go down. But if you really want to go, because if you notice some different elections, it might be a referendum. It mightn't be in a really that much of an interest to someone. It might be just tidying up some technicality in the constitution. It could be a very low turnout. Yet you could have some election that people feel strongly about, and you'll notice that the percentage goes up into the 70s, into the 80s of a turnout. You know, I mean, so I'm not sure. I just think if you really want to go and vote, there's no reason for it.
Do you think a weekend day would help at all?
I don't think it would make any difference. No, I don't. No, I think I'm just of that opinion that if you want to go, and you're here living in Ireland, in the democracy that we live in, that if you want to go and vote, you'll vote. You might. I mean, most people now, it's not everybody. I mean, people still if you go up to the supermarket or places on a Sunday, the place is chaotic, so it is very busy and there's a lot of people. So, and then the other people, then that it's their day that they just don't do anything. No, I think if you're tuned in and you want to vote, you will go.
Okay.
I don't care. I mean, as I said, it's open from 7 a.m. now in the morning till 10 p.m. And whatever, if you travel with your work now, you can arrange for a postal vote. If you're gone for a few days and you wouldn't be back till, you can arrange for a postal vote. If a person in their lottery, in whenever moves into a nursing home or into a residential place, that's all arranged now. So you have, it's a lot easier to get to it now as well. And as I said, surely 7 a.m. until 10 p.m. is a long day. And surely if you want to go, you'll go. Right. I mean, because polling people will tell you, you're passing up and down by the polling booth in the day. And people go up and down 3 or 4 times, but still don't go in, you understand?
And they've tried voting, I think, once at the weekend before. There was a by-election in South Tipperary back in 2001. Yeah. And the turnout was 58%. That was only a 1% increase on the general election as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, do you think it would improve the turnout, or is it just the principle of having it on a Sunday that you support having it on a Sunday, Anne?
Students were not, he is not taking into account the student aspect. You cannot expect students to come down in the middle of the week and then have to come down on a Sunday, which they might normally be. It's expensive. But apart from that, we're trying to cooperate the family on the one day, and middle of the week does not, or postal vote, does not suit the family get together to make it a memorial day that they can tune in later on with their own lives.
Right.
You must have the family together, make it a memorable day, and you need as many of the family. Doing it separately, young people, you have to take into account the disruption of studies, the disruption to the colleges. No postal vote will make up for that. So I cannot understand why a Sunday is not the day. It's anonymous all over Europe, Sunday. Right. It's well known.
The sense of what Anne is trying
to
suppose
to say. Students still have to travel on a Sunday. Like, I mean, if the election was on a Sunday, students are still going to have to still come down on a Sunday. Like, I mean,
and
if you have an election on Sunday.
They come down in the morning and go back in the evening. No problem to studies, no problem to colleges. Cheaper for the poor mothers who have to pay out for the student, maybe coming down twice. Might have some.
Worst public transport, though, Anne. Public transport services are not on a survey.
Trains travel every Sunday all over the country.
Right.
And people, young students get together and they're great for collaboration. Are you going down? Give me a lift. So forth. No, okay. I am very strong about this.
Okay, and I cut across Declan there, and sorry to cut across both of you. What Declan was saying on there. Declan, go on. You were saying what? Give the postal vote to students.
Maybe have postal vote for students. No, I mean, but Colm, in fairness, over the years, and I mean, if you study it, and I mean, think about maybe you had family, you know, maybe new neighbours or whatever. People, if they want to go, they did make an effort. I mean, I know people over the years that worked in Kilkenny, or there were students here, or whatever, and to travel up and down on the day of an election. No, if you want to go, like, okay, I know it's rare and you don't have to, but I mean, no, you could give students a postal vote, you could do something. I mean, I remember I remember this because I remember the lad do you remember there was a referendum, 2015, the marriage equality referendum. Now, there was a lot of activity that time, and anybody in the county council office or in a Garda station will tell you the activity of people checking the register or going, making sure their name was on the register. And the general activity that time, people will tell you, people dealing with it, was at college-aged people that were making sure their name was on the register, made sure their name, they travelled over. Those people that were away out of the country made sure their name was on the register, and they actually made it a thing to come back to vote on the day and that. I remember those people had very strong opinions about that election, I remember. And there was a lot of activity about the supplementary, you know, the making sure your name was on the register, like we could do now. Like if I could check and my name wasn't on it, I can make sure my name is on it on the supplementary register. Or if I needed a postal vote, I could go now and organise the postal vote if I wanted it. Had a genuine reason, if my work took me out of the country or my work took me up to Donegal for the week or something like that, I could arrange to have a postal vote.
Any qualms though about Friday the 24th being the Friday of a bank holiday weekend? Declan, you first on that.
No. And I mean, maybe some people may actually be a bit more around at the time.
Okay.
My qualm all along is there's no need to close down a school for the day.
Okay. We did put in for a statement from the Department of Housing on this, which is the relevant department where
the
Minister for Housing moves the writ for the election. The poll, under electoral law, it says the poll for any election can be taken on any day of the week, but the decision on the day and the date is always taken with quite a number of factors in mind, and it goes through them in terms of relevant constitutional requirements, and then basically the length of the campaign, giving time for people to facilitate the debate on that. But I think the point that you're concerned about, Anne, is it's creating a sense of family occasion, so that this is something a family does together and marks as a family every time an election comes up, and a kind of a sense of obligation to participate develops, given that it's a family occasion. Would that be a fair summation of it?
You have to soften it up by turning it into a day where young teenagers are at that stage, and if they go out with their parents, they sort of can't be helped. Well, this is what this election is about. And I don't care what anybody says. Everybody I have met have all said if it was only on a Sunday, we could make it a lovely family day.
Nice.
And postal vote does not work. The person isn't appearing down home. Whereas as a Sunday, they could even come down on a Saturday night. And remember, too, last Friday, the last time we had this election, mother of God, it was a rotten day, rainy. Now, are you telling me that people are going to, who haven't, maybe they're in very early, or maybe they just haven't time in the morning, if they're at their job, going off for a couple of pints to celebrate the end of the week after a hard week, and well, other women's going out shopping.
Well, I think you've made that point. And look, you know, it remains to be seen. Yeah. We'll see what the turnout is, how engaged people get. That is the job of an commission Umhawachán to get people out and inform them of all the issues. We're going to take a quick break. Thanks to Anne. Thanks to Declan. Back in a minute.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Now, you may have been listening to the programme last Friday. We were looking at AI and how it's changing the world of work and asking people what the essential human element of their job was. We were talking about AI at the start of this programme as well and some of the more nefarious uses to which it can be put. But going back to what we were talking about last week, how AI helps or hinders your job or whether it's putting people out of a job. John Hughes, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm.
You're a contractor and a small farmer yourself. Where does AI come into your job?
Well, indeed, that's a very good question because it's probably surrounding us and we don't realise it. I'm sitting in my tractor currently with a lot of technology that has been put into it by the manufacturer and some of the buttons, to be honest, which I never use because they don't apply to what I need to do. Mm. I have a full GPS system here for driving the tractor in the field when I need it and it allows me then to stay for work safer in the tractor because I can stay in the tractor longer because the drudgery of repetitive work has been taken out of it by the tractor steering itself.
All right.
In lines up and
down. You're sitting in the tractor at the moment, are you?
I'm parked on the side of the road sitting in the tractor, yeah. Right. On the way to the field.
And it sounds like, you know, by the way you describe it, it's like the bridge of the Millennium Falcon in Star Wars, that you're surrounded by a bank of screens and buttons. Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's a very different tractor to the one you started driving when you were a teenager, is it?
Indeed. 48 years ago, I got my driving license, and I was driving before that. There's three television screens in this tractor currently, and that's before you put another couple of minutes for the machine that you may have behind you. And all of these have to be configured to do whatever job they're required to do. But yes, definitely. I mean, when we all started driving cars and tractors, there was only two lights in the front and two in the back and no yellow light on the roof and just an indicator. Now it's, like you say, an airplane cab in this vehicle here with all the screens. So the technology has been imposed upon us, whether we like it or not, because the manufacturers have put that into the machines. And then, of course, as consumers, it's been pushed on us. And we're surrounded, I'm sure, by technology. And perhaps if we want to get away from it, we'd have to park up our cars, park up our phones, park up everything. But it's slowly creeping in on top of us. And in our situation, in our industry, we need the technology to be able to get the work done in the fields because we're short of labour in our sector, as in many other sectors, indeed. And the technology allows us to stay going for a bit longer anyway.
And if you're out, what job are you on your way to do at the moment?
Well, we have two fields of beans left to cut, spring beans in two fields. And we're on our way up the road with the combine and two trailers, and I'm pulling one of the trailers behind me.
And how has technology made that job better? You know, how is it more efficient?
Well, the combine has a GPS system in it, so it'll be able to drive itself up and down the field while it's been monitored by the operator. It'll give you the output of the machine. It'll show you how much diesel you're burning per hour, how many acres per hour you're cutting, how much diesel you're burning the whole job when you're finished, and the amount of tonnage that you have harvested off the field.
And, you know, you're talking about spreading seeds, presumably, as well, before there's ever a harvest. So do you get to kind of use your seed more efficiently if you're making sure you're not duplicating certain areas of the field or spraying it into the hedge?
Indeed, yes, with a GPS system controlling your driving pattern in the field, you won't have as much of an overlap and you would use between 10 and 15% less seed and less chemicals and less inputs.
Right. By chemicals, you mean fertilisers, is it?
Fertilisers and sprays when you're going to apply a spray on the crop later in the season.
Right. So, I mean, that's like you're talking about it being a labour saver. You're talking about it cutting down on fuel consumption, sprays, fertilisers, everything. So there's an environmental knock on as well, which all makes it sound like you're saving a load of money through this technology. And no doubt you are. But the upfront cost on the plant you're driving there, what are you talking about there? Well, has that gone up since you got into the game?
Well, I'm in the game now nearly 50 years, and this machine, the GPS system, is over €10,000. And then you need
just for the GPS,
just the GPS, yeah. And the tractor comes from the factory GPS ready, which means the plugs are in it, So all you got to do is connect the electrical connectors, and the system has to be configured. And then you put a receiver on the roof, so that picks up the signal from the satellites. And then you pay a fee if you want to for a more accurate signal. Whereas the one on your phone is not a fee-based system. And some of the systems in GPS, you can get down to an accuracy of about a foot or so, 30 centimetres.
And is it worth the subscription?
It is indeed, yes, because the accuracy and the non-repetitive overlap is what you're looking for.
Right.
And you want to be able to save on inputs and offer a service to your clients that's repeatable. So you can go back to the same field and drive on the same tracks year in, year out.
And do you ever see a day, John, where you're not sitting in the cab of the tractor, where there's an automated system going up and down, where you're watching this remotely from a building nearby, maybe operating combines and tractors in several fields?
Well, currently, John Deere have a system, and other manufacturers have a system where the combine can control the tractor driving beside it when it needs to offload the grain. So the combine can call up the tractor with the trailer, and it'll parallel drive beside the combine, and then the combine will offload into the trailer, and it knows its position through the GPS locators, and the whole system talks together. And when the trailer is full and the combine is empty, the trailer will drive to the end of the field and park up.
And how much are you talking for the likes of that? You know, for a fully kitted out, let's say, leaving the combine aside, for a fully kitted out tractor that's enabled with that kind of tech, what kind of money are you talking?
I wouldn't like to know. Another someone's telephone number.
Really? Are you talking a six-figure sum, are you?
Well, this software I'm sitting at the minute now would cost you about €200,000.
Right.
Yeah. It's €1,000 per horsepower in round figures. And tractors have gone up 60,000. This tractor now has gone up €60,000 in the last 6 to 7 years. €10,000 a year.
So, in terms of somebody's say annual income, or like the average salary, like you're talking about, what, that's five times the median national salary. If you were to kind of call that in at about €40,000, when you started driving tractors, what kind of prices were you looking at in terms of affordability, multiples of somebody's salary? And I know I'm putting you on the spot for an old pencil and paper figuring out there, but broadly speaking, how has the affordability changed?
Oh, sure. The machines got bigger because the men have got scarcer. So we've gone bigger and gone wider and gone faster to get the same, to get more work done at the same time. Now, I saw a publication, an article in the Farmers Journal recently, where someone wrote in to say that the combine, when they bought their first combine, it cost them 150 tons of grain to pay for the combine. Now, with today's prices, it's 1,500 tons of grain to pay for the same combine, because the price of grain has not kept pace with the cost of the equipment that's required to harvest it.
Up by 10 times.
So the teams have gone bigger and bigger and bigger, but the operators have been reduced out of it. Now, technology has been put into the field to reduce the amount of labour required, but still labour is required. And in the future, I would see an operator coming into the field with a swarm of robots that would seed the field in GPS lines, that they wouldn't bump into one another. They'd all have their own, as it were, track. And they would refill automatically. And there'd be just the technician to keep an eye on them all and load them up onto the truck and take them onto the next field. And these things would work 24/7, except for the rain, of course. But sure, I can't work 24/7 and I get them too old. So
right. The robots may get their wellies on. Thanks, John. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a minute.